Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast today, which is all about writing great content. Reports of the death of written content have been greatly exaggerated. Blogs were the second most created form of content in 2022. And whether it's a blog post, a website homepage, or a press release, writing is really essential for communicating with a charity's audiences, establishing your organization as an information authority in its field, and really for helping your organization reach as many people as possible online. At Charity Digital, we release over 50 to 60 articles per month. So who best to discuss the fundamentals of great online writing than with our amazing content team? We also release podcasts like this one, as well as videos and articles, which always rely on an article or some written format. So if you're not subscribed yet, please hit the like button on your podcast platform and find out more about us and all the great content that we produce on www.charitydigital.org.uk. And without further ado, let me introduce our guest for today. So my colleagues, Josie Sparling, content assistant, Laura Stanley, content writer, and Ewan Mark Jones, content editor. They will tell us what they've learned about writing in the charity sector, some hard and fast rules that can help charity communicate using the written word, and more generally, all their best tips on how to create great content. So hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hope you're all well.
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Thanks.
Well, that's great. It's great to have you here and to discuss all things content today. Obviously, we've had, three of you in the team now that have joined at different times of Charity Digital. And if you wanted to, take a step back and reflect, what have been the biggest lessons you've learned about producing articles for Charity Digital? I don't know who would like to go first.
Jan, you've been here the longest.
Actually, yes.
Not to drop you in it.
Yeah, I guess I'm the oldest as well. I think that's probably a good place to start. A lot of my history going back to uni, I think you start to learn how to write in you learn a lot before that, but you learn in an essayistic style. And it can be a bit deadpan and a bit boring. The prose itself is something you almost have to get out of. And I think I worked for several publishers since then, Penguin, Oxford University Press, Egmont UK, LexisNexis. And they all taught me different things about conciseness, brevity, things like that. But I think the best ways to learn how to write, you're never going to really get taught a lesson just concisely, no matter how sort of much you train. If you go into LinkedIn, for example, LinkedIn Learning, it has some helpful courses, but it just has to come in with almost everything in the world, really. So one of the best places to learn how to write, I think, is books, just reading a lot of books. I don't think you have much business writing if you don't read quite often, to be honest. That's quite a blunt statement.
Wow, very blunt.
I mean, I think it's the thing I've noticed most of all people
who I agree.
Would-be writers who don't read will not be able to compete in terms of having clean prose and everything like that with the people. You should learn from the experts like you do in any other creative field. So I think in terms of you can read books, that means fiction, that means nonfiction, particularly nonfiction or fiction, depending on how you're writing, the level of creativity, the level of sort of experimentalism within your prose. But I think there's also books on actual sort of writing itself. So some of the ones that I've encountered over the years is William, I can't forget his name, W.B.Y., I think, W.E.Y. Well, the one who wrote Charlotte's Web. E.B.Y.
Yes, I was right. I panicked.
Yeah, his professor gave him a book years ago. This is probably the most famous writing book. It's called Elements of Style by William Shrunk with E.B. White. And E.B. White basically reproduced it because it had such a good positive impact on his prose. It's a tiny little thing. I read it probably once a year just to kind of refresh. Mm-hmm. And it's got all these amazing little things that will tell you. I mean, the one that I always remember is Omit Needless Words. So you basically, once you get that into your writing, it revolutionizes your prose because you when you go through uni, with my, in my experience anyway, I added words, I synonymized needlessly. And then what would happen in the end is it would be clunky and not very good. You omit needless words and you simplify, and suddenly everything's very clean and it looks good. William Zinsser has On Writing Well, which is good, particularly for journalists, as is Anne Lamont, Bird by Bird. And Stephen King has a good writing book, which is more about habits and forming habits, which is another important thing to do, I think. So yeah, and then some of the little quick tips about writing clean, I think, is change your font on your documents, and you'll just basically, you'll read it back and it'll be new to you. Read aloud, like I do with almost every piece of writing that means something. I mean, it depends on how much emphasis you want to give on each piece, but I would read something aloud and then just rework sentence by sentence. If you want a thing to be perfect, work on every sentence and see how it feels. And finally, I would say have colleagues check it. We're doing an environmental push, but I used to give the advice that you should print everything off and check it. I won't give that advice anymore because we're really pushing, trying to do stuff on climate change, and it would be inconsistent. But nonetheless, the final thing I'd say is editors are always right. Your editor is always right. No matter what they say, they will be. You should listen to them. I'll leave it at that because I'm taking too much time.
In which case, Johan, as being the content editor at Chatham, does that mean you're always right?
Yeah, I am always right. And that's the lesson I really want everyone to take away from this.
Thank you. Nora, do you want to obviously add more to what Johan was saying?
Yeah, I completely agree with the reading thing. I always notice the quality of my writing low to begin with, I don't know, going up when I've read, or like I find the words come a lot easier when I've been reading. I also don't think it's necessarily about reading books, it's reading content, so reading widely around what the charity sector is publishing, but also reading a lot of articles and a lot of journalistic writing really helps, like especially if that's the tone of voice that you're trying to achieve. I wrote for a trade magazine, and that taught me some really good tips on keeping focus in articles, because with Johan, like writing essays, I think it's very easy to try and pack a lot of information to like really in a sort of quite verbose, is that the right word? She said, I love vocabulary.
Wow.
in quite a verbose way. So I think that you try to steer away from that. Like one of the first things my editor taught me, which I think Josie actually knows the name of it, which I didn't know. The triangle of information, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, I think it's the inverted triangle. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. See, Josie's much better.
Nearly, Laura.
Josie is by far the best of us. It was from back when printing presses were there. That's a thing. I'm being laughed at. This is awful. The most important information, if they were trying to cut down a story in a newspaper, which would often happen if there were like bigger stories coming through, they would cut it from the bottom up, so that you had to, if your story got cut, the most important thing had to be in the first sentence, basically. And so that just helped me. I don't know. I think it's really helped me structure my articles a lot better. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just the best rule I've had, because it's the one that's really stuck with me. So if I'm summarizing a report, it's, you don't always have to have the name of the report, because that's not what people need to know. They need to know what the headline statistic is. And then they'll find the report in the second paragraph and that sort of thing. So yeah, I just think it's really helped keep me focused. Not that you can tell from that rambling, but yeah.
Well, thank you, Laura. And as you mentioned earlier, Josie is our most recent member of the content team. She's already made amazing work and has got loads of great insights. So yeah, Josie, what are your biggest lessons, or what have you also taught the rest of the team since you've joined?
Something I've learned since joining is definitely to be less perfectionistic and do more, like, obviously you need to be thoughtful and think about what you're doing, but I have a habit of just planning a lot and thinking a lot, and it's really helped to have momentum since working at Charity Digital. So yeah, that's one of the lessons I've learned. And yeah, also I would agree about the reading thing. Also just like having maybe specific models of what you would like to emulate, and looking at what other people are doing. So if you're a charity, like what other charities of a similar size or a different or similar cause, like how they're writing, what they're writing, how often they're they're publishing it, maybe, like, those might be relevant things. Mm-hmm. And yeah, also, as a team, we've done copy editing a little bit. So like in a group, watching each other edit and like seeing the decisions that each other makes, which has been really useful for me, like as a new member of the team, to like, just see why choices are made.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that leads us very nicely to my second question, which is, you know, since you joined and obviously all the great work that the team has done, but I'd be very curious to know how has Charity Digital's content been developed and what's the process behind that? I don't know if, Laura, you want to start with this?
I did not develop the content strategy, but we all had a sort of a hand in. Well, I've seen it and I work to it. But I think, it's mostly according to sort of the need of the sector, isn't it? So we're Charity Digital. We're all about helping charities become more digital. And so we want to talk about the digital trends that are going on, the best practices. So we want to have stuff like that. We have a lot on digital fundraising, which obviously came into play a lot more during the pandemic. And we have a lot about operations and how things can become better operationally with digital. But we also have, Josie has actually started a really great charity spotlight series, which is where we're trying to talk to charities a bit more about what they are doing, a bit more inspiration, a softer sort of inspiration piece, which I think is really I think it's a really great development of our content, because it's not just how-to guides anymore, which I also think, both have value, but I think it's good to give value in all these different ways. And I guess that's what goes into the strategy. Is that right, Johan?
Mm. I think at the very beginning, you do need those core things, the house style, which gives you the grammar, punctuation, usage, and is good to share with freelancers so you have consistency across the board. Agreeing on formatting, which often relies on a good CRM, and deciding use of formats, so as simple as double spacing or things like that, and how it looks on the page is really important. And you can have a big say in that, even if your CRM isn't that advanced. WordPress, for example, will do it. What's Laura want now?
Do you mean CMS?
I do mean CMS. Yes. And how dare you?
The editor's always right.
The editor, yeah, I was about to say, the editor's always right.
A CMS is a...
Which stands for?
A content management system.
That could be anything from WordPress to what we have as Arduino, right?
Laura.
I'm just making sure that people know. This is why I'm so good at writing content.
But yeah, then image guides as well. So to define what your image should look like, take a look at the Charity Digital website and you'll see the consistency in our titles, subtitles, in our grammar, if you want to be that fine-tuned about it, and our images and everything else. And that's not accidental. That takes a lot of work building the fundamentals. And once you have that, you define how you should have a content calendar to define the commissioning processes. So how many of each subject, how many of each thing you want to publish each month. And I think from there, we, with Josie on board, it brought, and Laura when she joined, it really brought new life to the content. Because one thing editors will get, they get stagnated and you start producing the same thing over and over, because you essentially, it's what you know. And that's not a good editorial policy and not a good content policy. You basically should be pushed and try to redevelop based on user needs. We recently mm-hmm. conducted some user research and it told us things that we should have known. We don't talk enough about being a charity, even though we are a charity. We don't focus on audience needs enough in terms of seniority or addressing different problems they might have. And there's some other things like the charity spotlight that Laura mentioned, Josie has basically launched. That was a massive thing that we'd overlooked, but Josie knew about it almost before she saw the user research, because it's something she saw that we were missing. And me and Laura have in a way been here long enough that we just didn't know we missed it, I suppose is the right mm-hmm. way to say that. Is that right?
Mm, I'd say so. I think it was also like just a lack of, as you say, sort of, it's not a stagnating thing, because I don't think our content was stagnant, but it was also just a time thing and just a not thinking that about that sort of aspect of things as deeply. And then, as I said, it's great to have the Josie's fresh perspective. And I think it's a really great thing that we're doing with the charity spotlights. Mm. I think they're really interesting, and it's just a different way of consuming content on our site now, which is, you want to offer people as many ways of engaging with you as possible, right? Mm-hmm. And it's broader and, yeah, better, I think.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both. And yeah, Josie, obviously, you know, your Johan and Laura have been singing praise about your idea of the charity spotlight. Can you maybe tell us a bit more about the process you have for this example of content?
Yeah, thank you as well. yeah, the process would be kind of researching different charities. And from my perspective, it's just generally looking on their website and seeing what I can see about, for us, it's digital, things that relating to digital tools and processes and stuff like that. And then I would reach out to the charity and ask for an interview. And so far we've got two published, but they'll be every month. Yeah, and it's been really interesting. I don't know if there's anything more.
No, but that's great. And are there you know, specific elements that you're looking like? Is that part of a you know, of a bigger plan, or is it more in tune with what's being discussed in the sector at the moment?
It was more just thinking about what if I was in the audience, in our audience. Like as a charity professional, I probably want to know, and we give advice about digital things. And I think it was just a way of saying, what are people actually doing? And it's rather than a how to, it's like it's from someone's specific experience, and that can have more detail about, like, for example, what the size of the charity, or like different random challenges they might have had. Yeah, it's very specific. So that's kind of the goal.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that. Yes, and it's also very inspiring for other charities to see what their peers have experienced, you know, always being put in a professional format. That content that's thought about is always more enjoyable to read. Laura, you wanted to add?
I was just going to say, I feel like you're never going to, I agree completely with that point. I just think you're never going to know what's going to spark something. And so sometimes it's not necessarily reading a how-to guide that's going to do it. It's going to be something that's like, oh, that's, I'm facing a similar challenge, or maybe they're not even facing a similar challenge, but they can apply what's been learned in that context to something else. And I just, it really reminds me of something that was said at the conference of how, like, free time can be the most inspirational time, and we don't prepare enough of it. So it's a bit of, it's what I said earlier about it being a sort of softer inspiration thing, but I think it's just as valuable. And I think it's a really great way.
No, absolutely. Absolutely, Laura. And actually, you're making my job very easy, because we're leading very nicely into the third question. Is, you know, you talked about inspiration, Laura. So where can our listeners find great writing inspirations? Maybe Johan, if you want to start.
I was going to say Johan.
Johan is inspiration.
I think RSS feeds are a way the journalists do it. Typically, I use those in previous roles where it was a bit more journalistic. They're a bit outdated now as well, though, but there's so many different ways you can do it. There's so much tech you can use, but still I kind of return to an old favorite, which is just having favorites. Oh, God, the W use of favorite there was not ideal. But having a favorite bar in your Google Chrome or whatever you use, Safari or whatever, and just having the websites that provide you lots of information. So for our purposes, typically I have about 15 websites all leading to charities who produce content, and charities that talk about charity sector things, so about 5 to 10 digital ones, and then just ones that look at sort of the mechanisms of the workplace, places like the Wall Street Journal, the FT is always a good place, the Yale Review, and then the Harvard Review of Harvard Business Review, and just places like that. And I just look into them and look for inspiration on content ideas. I think looking at your data, your pre-existing data, and seeing what's successful is one way of doing it, but it's not a bona fide way, in that it shouldn't be your only way. So for example, like, a lot of people go, oh, look, we're doing really good articles on fundraising, so let's double down on that and just keep writing about fundraising. And that's fine, but then you're sort of siloing your own content, and you need to grow the other ones, even if they're not having immediate short-term results. So don't be too short-termist, I think is a good bit of advice. And think about the long term, think about building audiences around content ideas, not just seeing through the ones you already have. I think that you'll have a ton of data just from your own content production. So that's comments on your articles, comments in questions in webinars, questions preceding podcasts, or questions on social media after podcasts, and so on and so forth. There's a million different ways that people are interacting with you, and so many charities just end up ignoring those forms of interaction when they're a massively sort of beneficial resource, and it tells you what your audience actually want to hear. So use that to your advantage. I think on webinars we use Typeform, and we just go through those answers and basically look at what might be applicable to people in the charity sector. And then depending on your team, you know, like asking around your entire team, saying, what have you noticed? What have you heard? One thing we do quite regularly is check in with the social media people, the marketing people, because they are on the ground hearing feedback. What are you hearing? What are you seeing in the chat rooms, in groups, in Facebook groups, and so on and so forth? And then they give us the information that that might serve our audience better. The other way is, of course, user research. That takes time and is also quickly outdated. So it can be a big spend for quite soon outdated content. So one more way popped into my head, and that's arranging a committee of people across who are in the know in the sector, who that's something we're currently working on, who can then inform you of what they want to hear about and what their networks want to hear about, which can be a bit time consuming, but the most applicable way, if you're a small charity, I would say is the easiest one. Find your favorites, find your websites, find your inspiration, and go with that. Use the judgment of one person instead of reaching out to many. It's obviously not as democratic and not as good, but you have to do what you can do within your limited resources.
No, absolutely. Yeah, thank you, Anne. And Laura, have you got other tips or ideas to find inspiration?
Link to what Jan was just saying, actually. Set a Google alert for topics that related to your cause, or for, you know, charity campaigns. That's a good one, because then any like charity campaign will come up that's been talked about on like a trade magazine or something like that. So I think Google alerts are a really good place to start, and it does the same thing as having favorites, but can sort of be a bit more widespread. I also agree with Johan in terms of like talking to your team, but I just think that, you know, in the sector we're all having lots of conversations, and one of the best pieces of advice that I've had for like pitching articles was write down stuff that you're talking about, because if stuff that you're talking about in conversations, it's probably going to be useful to someone else as well, especially if that conversation comes up a lot. Like we had it a lot with the cost of living crisis.
I just wrote that down.
I'm glad, because it was really insightful. So just don't delete conversations from your brain, if that makes sense. And also, did you mention keywords?
No, but I'm sure you're going to.
Well, yes, that's the SEO expert in this. I'm not Johannes. Keywords are just a really great way of looking for what people are looking for. And so if you want to write an article in the area of fundraising, for example, you can look up what exactly people need but from fundraising, what their regular searches are, and it'll so the good keyword sites will come up with how often that's searched for, and maybe there's something more niche that you can help with, or I don't know. I just think that keywords is a really good way of focusing your content as well.
No, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for all these tips, Laura and Johan. And I mean, if after that you're having a little bit of a lack of inspiration, maybe you can ask AI to help you. Obviously, everybody has now been made aware of, even tried ChatGPT. And I wanted to have your thoughts about this and how it could help or not help you create great content. I don't know if Josie, you wanted to start giving some of your thoughts about that.
I think I prefer the idea of humans writing because I think there's issues possibly with plagiarism and also with ChatGPT or like an AI writer. And I think also there's also concerns about how they use data from across the internet, so it could also reflect like human biases and stereotypes and things that you might not want to reflect your charity if you were good to use that in your content. So And also, I just think kind of following your own curiosity and your own, like, what you want to write about and how you want to write it is a lot of a better way to communicate, and it will be more unique and original probably than something written by AI. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Johan, you wanted to maybe add something?
I'd echo that. I mean, the plagiarism point is, it's one that we're weirdly not talking about much. Like, it's kind of like, oh, look, I just wrote a whole article and you didn't. Like, you know that's a problem. Secondly, I quite like my job and want to keep it. So, yeah, I mean, that would be great. But the third thing is, beyond the human biases that Josie mentioned, which are obviously massively important, and we constantly talk about them in the charity sector as an issue that we need to address, and then we kind of just avoid it when it comes to automated writing, apparently. It's going to make search engines the most bland and unusable thing without any actual substance or any original thought whatsoever, if everyone depends on these, because they cannot produce original thought, obviously. I hope. they can't produce original thought, so they are just plagiarizing everything from the internet in a very efficient way. But the beauty of the content we produce and the beauty of content that I consume is that I'm getting some of the person's original thoughts and opinion on that. The one thing I would say as well on top of that, so I want original thought. I want to see a human, plus the human touch that Josie talked about. I mean, on a prose level, you could always tell. My friend sent an article recently and said he's I won't say his name because he could get in trouble, but he's a content editor and he used ChatGPT. And I was like, I know you did. It's not that difficult. I mean, if Laura and Josie send me a ChatGPT article, I will know they have. We will, I hope. And they're smiling right now as if they're...
they might have done it before.
But beyond that, I was just going to say, like, the whole setup of it is very ill-advised. And it's just not... I had a point. I've lost it now. I just went on a bit of a... Laura, over to you.
No, I agree with... I also like my job quite a lot. And it's been quite hard seeing people be like, oh, I just get ChatGPT to do it. And I'm like, what? I'm right here. But I think it is... It's what Johan said about... It's like a bit of both of what Johan and Josie said, definitely. Like, we try and talk about content and making it stand out. And that's really important to the charity sector. So why would you try and make it like what anyone else can produce anyway? Like, that is not what we're about. And also, you've not got the sensitivity sort of read that a human has. So, like, you know, the biases that Josie was mentioning, and we're dealing with, as charities, we're probably going to be dealing with sensitive subjects, right, as well. So you need to have, I don't think that's going to have the quality control that you need. But yeah, I just think it's not going to produce authentic content, and it's not going to produce content that can make you sort of feel in the same way that like a human can, I don't think. Or and I think, because I think, as Johan said, if you can tell, you're just going to be like, oh, well.
I think to add sorry to interrupt, it's a bit like I remember writing's often like just defined as like prolonged thought, right? And I think that's true. When I sit down and write, if I'm doing it properly, I will take a while over it, and it will be like I'm thinking while I'm doing it. Develop my thoughts, and they become richer in time, right? Josie's actually a good example. Again, sorry to put you on the spot, but Laura and me, before Josie joined, we actually didn't have much time because there was two of us in a team and we had a lot of work. It meant that the articles we were producing were actually quite limited. And that's not because of automation. That's because we didn't have enough time to have that enriching process of prolonged thought. So our articles would be produced sort of over 4 hours or 3 hours for 800 words, which is not long enough, really, if you want to actually add serious value and put that into
color and depth to it. Yeah.
But also research. I mean, the one that I wrote recently, I actually had a bit of free time to do it. It's called Can Tech Save the Planet? And I did research. I read a book, you know, I read books about these subjects, and then it just becomes a richer process. It gives you the time. AI is the lowest common denominator of that form. It's completely unprovoked form. And so it just can never provide the value that you provide as an individual. I mean, realistically, if we lived in a much better civilization, we wouldn't be remotely worried about this, because everyone would be like, well, this is just a stupid thing. The problem is, we're living in a sort of, sorry, this is might be a bit ranty, but we are living in a society where poor quality at a quick speed is prioritized over high quality with thought. I would like to think on the charity sector, as Laura's mentioned, we are dealing with very important topics and we should give them the time and the energy they deserve and not try and make shortcuts. And I hope that is an ethos of like accepted throughout the sector by me.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, good content, authentic content and an authentic voice can really deliver great things like, you know, more engaged audiences, you know, better fundraising and better emotional connections. So it is definitely, you know, something to keep into account, the authenticity aspect of anything that you create as content. I don't know if, Laura, you wanted to add more around that.
No, I think that's my main point, really. The one thing I'll say is that maybe ChatGPT or AI stuff could be used for ideas. I think that makes slightly more sense than using it for a full-blown article, like just as a jumping-off point. But also, yeah, I would just be cautious of it because as it's already put, I'm assuming it pulls a lot of information that's already been written, so yeah, it's already reliant on humans anyway. So that's your answer. It's just going to make things uniform, isn't it?
It's just an amalgamation of the internet, and the worst thing about that is that they're going to reproduce what's already there in slightly nicer form, and then you're going to search and you're going to find that which will then be produced in slightly nicer form until everything's just uniform. And it's not how it'll work. They'll change the algorithm, but it can never. I just don't think it can ever replace the human. The vulnerability and everything human within.
Yeah. Growth. What's going to make people stand out? And it's not going to be.
It's going to be. I mean, the ones I've read have been really bland and they're impressed. People are impressed by them because they're bland. You know, they're impressed by the relaying of information. No one's gone, oh, this is poetry, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. I would say that people are impressed by them because it's like, I think writing is a very specific skill set. So I think it can be quite hard to development, but what they do, it obviously does it at such speed that people are just like, oh my god. But you're right, no one's actually thinking this is beautiful, oh my god,
no one's sharing it on socials going, this changed my life.
That picture of the Pope did the AI picture.
That's where AI has become effective.
Scary.
Great. Well, that's all we've got time for today, actually. And so thank you very much, Josie, Laura and Johan, for sharing your tips and your experience and your time today. It's been really great and really inspiring hearing all of you three talking about content and the authenticity and the research and the time that goes into producing great, great content. And I hope that you listeners will have enjoyed as well. And obviously, if you're interested, just check our website to see all our team's great work here. In terms of next time, our next podcast later on this month will be all about cybersecurity. So that's a completely different topic. But our partners, the Public Interest Registry, which is the organization behind the .org domain name, will be sharing tips on cybersecurity. So we do hope that you join us for this one too. And in the meantime, stay tuned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Lisa.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this Charity Digital podcast. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not represent the views, thoughts, and opinions of Charity Digital. The material and information presented here is for general information purposes only. Thanks for listening.